the healthcare system is what it is, but I think that the more we look at it, this brokenness has so many different parts. And for me, it was, you know, the doctors, I get it. There is a really fine line that physicians walk when it comes to seeing their patients in situations that are really, really dark. But I think for me, I really wanted to push these physicians in feeling more and acting more human. We were part of, you know, what I said in the book, you know, research projects. You know, we were treated like animals and science projects. We weren't treated like humans. It was a very degrading situation that these families go through. And I think that it can take you to a really dark place where you're not treated human any longer.
Welcome. You are listening to the Hero of the Hour podcast, the show dedicated to empowering you to take financial freedom into your own hands. Through expert interviews with decades of experience, this show will give you not only the tactical strategies of what's working in business, but the appropriate mindsets to master your financial future and build generational wealth. Heroes and entrepreneurs operate with a similar anything is possible mentality, and that is exactly what our show is about. Your host is none other than Mark B. Murphy, CEO of Northeast Private Client Group and best-selling author of 3 books, all dedicated to helping others plan for generational wealth. He and his team are on a mission to share their knowledge and techniques so that others can enjoy a life of financial security and freedom. Get ready to be inspired to create the life of your dreams. Let's go.
Welcome, everybody, to the Hero of the Hour podcast. I'm your host, Mark Murphy, and I'm joined today by Amy Post, the author of Out of the Gray and Into the Light. Amy's experience underscores the importance of questioning medical protocols and seeking holistic approaches to health, transcending the narrative of merely battling cancer to navigating a complex healthcare system and finding balance between traditional and alternative medicine. As we draw our conversation to a close, Amy shares insights into her ongoing advocacy and the work she does as with her own podcast, Advocacy and Hope. She emphasizes the necessity of being prepared for life's unforeseen challenges, both health-wise and financially. This enlightening discussion between Amy and myself serves as a beacon of strength and a compelling call to action for a more human-centric healthcare practice. It highlights the transformative power of community support, faith, and the perseverance in the face of adversity. So without further ado, join me with the amazing interview with Amy Post. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Hero of the Hour podcast. I'm here with Amy Post as my guest today. She's the author of Out of the Gray and Into the Light. And Amy, before we get started, tell us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. It's a great question. You know, I never thought of myself as writing a book. I'm a lover of books, but this was something that was very out of the ordinary. And so I think when I tell my story, it's really interesting. But my book really was born from my experience with my daughter over the last 9 years. And my daughter was 3. She was diagnosed with malignant liver cancer. And it was a complete and utter surprise. We had no idea. Now, as you'll find out, there were some gut instincts. There were some things that popped up, and we'll kind of talk about those surprises. But I don't think anybody's ever ready to hear those words. You know, your 3-year-old child has malignant liver cancer, and it just kept getting worse. When the bottom had dropped out as far as I thought it could drop out, it just kept dropping out. And so I really just take everybody through our journey of 9 years, and it is extremely deep emotional, but it's encouraging. It's interesting to say that it's encouraging, but you know, it really has a huge story to it. And about a year ago, God just took me to a place of complete surrender, and I needed it. And so I think what I've really learned is, you know, there are so many that are in our position with having these types of diagnosis and news, and what do you do with it? And who do you turn to, and who can help? So that's really where my journey has gone, and it's consistently changing. Every time I turn around, something extraordinary, you know, continues to happen. So I just passing on encouragement, but a really good story.
How do you hope that people will read this, especially those going through maybe something similar, God forbid? What do you hope they get out of that, out of the book?
Yeah, you know, I hope that they get, and I think that the different people can get different things out of it. And I think that that is where there are a lot of different threads within the book. So I hope people get enlightenment, and I hope they get a little bit of encouragement throughout the book, especially with, I think, how the book came to be born, but also just, you know, thinking about what can happen. And a lot of our story was, you know, preparation. You know, it's not if something challenging is going to happen in your life, it's when and how you're going to step up, how you're going to advocate for yourself, for others, how you're going to prepare for these types of things in life, because this is a huge thing to think about. You know, we all try not to think about death. We all try possibly not to think about, you know, preparing for our future, but these are all things we really have to be prepared for. And it doesn't have to be something negative. For me, it was really dark, and now it's not nearly as dark. And I just want people to realize that in preparing for these types of challenges, it can be a much better experience.
You know, I can only imagine if I'm watching or listening to this podcast and you say, I can't think of too many things worse than my 3-year-old daughter being diagnosed. Tell us what happened. What was the reaction? What was the first thing you did? What, when you get this diagnosis, what happens next?
Yeah, you know, and I had some mother's instincts, and I think any mother out there can really relate. The book is also going to really challenge anyone to trust their instinct, trust their gut. I had a feeling many, many months before my daughter was diagnosed that something was happening. And I couldn't put my finger on it. It was very tough. It was very challenging and difficult to understand maybe what was going to happen. But as I look back now, 9 years, and I kind of wrote the book backwards, looking at different things that happened. But it was a situation where our daughter wasn't feeling well. We were called by the daycare, and it was that instinct of my heart just falling to my feet. Something was wrong. And I think anybody else might have thought, oh, no big deal. You know, she doesn't feel well. And, you know, we'll pick her up. It'll be fine. She was spiking sporadic temperatures for about 6 months prior to this. And our pediatrician was telling us that everything was fine when I knew that things were not okay. And I think that as you go through the book, you're going to read, you know, trusting your gut is one of the most important things you need to do. But also, I know the fear and the desire to trust those in the medical profession, but I think more than anything, you really need to trust yourself. And I trusted my gut, and I really pushed it for about 6 months. I knew something was going on. But the day that she came home from school was the day that I think everything changed. And then she kept spiking really high temperatures and having very bad abdominal pains. And at first I thought it was, you know, appendicitis or something, you know, I was hoping was a little more simple, even though somebody would think, oh gosh, you know, an appendicitis is certainly not simple. Well, it was to what my instincts were certainly telling me. And she spiked about 104 temperature, and my husband rushed her to the emergency room late one evening. And we were called about 3:30 in the morning to take her to Children's Hospital immediately. And that next day we sat through hours and hours of testing and in a little white room. And we were given the grave diagnosis of her having malignant liver cancer. And she had had it about 6 months. And no one ever wants to have that diagnosis, but it's that moment when you think, you know, what next? You know, your life has just kind of been taken from you. You've been given one of the scariest diagnoses for your child. You know, you can't take their place. You'd love to, but you certainly can't. And what do you do at that point? And so our journey really began at that moment of that diagnosis. And I think my instincts really kicked in because as you'll read through the book, it's all about You know, what are you going to do? How are you going to prepare? How are you going to stand up and just be this advocate and fight for your child and for yourself? And, you know, that's exactly what I did. So I hope people take a look at this and really just gather inner strength that maybe they didn't think that they had, or look at a situation and think, wow, my situation's not nearly as bad as somebody else's situation. So I really hope that people take many different things from the book. And I think that they will as they read through it and maybe read through it several times.
You know, I probably got ahead of ourselves a little bit. Why don't you tell people a little bit about you, a little about your family? Tell us kind of a little bit about how what your background is, and, you know, how, you know, anything you want to share with us about that?
Yeah. So I have been in medical aesthetic sales for about 15 years. I've been in medical sales for over 20 years. I started in the veterinary arena and then transitioned into aesthetic medical sales. So very competitive, you know, very cutthroat. I've done sales all my life. So I think that, you know, that's just been one of my loves. Now, if you take it back even further, you know, I was born and raised, you know, in the Midwest, and, you know, just a normal family. But I always had a love for business ownership, sales. It was really my thing. So I started owning businesses at the age of 15. And when I was 18, I graduated from high school, bought my second business, and really just catapulted that. And that's kind of where my love for business and sales set in. Got married, had a couple kids. I have a son who is now 16, and my daughter is now 13. So when my daughter was diagnosed, my son was just 6. And so it's bittersweet looking back, but we had a beautiful life. It's what everybody wants. You know, you get married, you have, you know, some kids, buy your first house, have great jobs. You know, life was good. And I think for me, I think what people need to understand was, you know, I was in very high pressure, cutthroat sales. And I think I've always thought in my life that I could control everything. You know, if I eat healthy, I work out, I take care of myself, I won't get sick. I do the right thing, I'm a good person, you know, bad things won't happen.
Sure.
I was always that type of person. And this venture took me for a ride. And I think what it taught me a lot about was you can't control anything. You just need to kind of leave it up to God. And so I think through this journey, finding my faith, and for anybody out there, whatever that looks like, but I think just finding a really amazing relationship with my faith and God was extraordinary through this entire thing.
Yeah, what were some of the, you know, so you people kind of are raised for the most part in this country to trust the medical system, trust doctors. What were some of the most unexpected things that you encountered dealing with the healthcare system as you got this diagnosis?
Yeah, you know, doctors are great. You know, they're wonderful. They have their specific profession. And I do believe that there is so much good in traditional Western medicine. But what I really found was there had to be something else. There had to be more, because we were given, you know, one diagnosis. We were given, you know, a very small box that we were supposed to live in. Here's the answer. Here's one option. And that was it. And I think for me, I couldn't get it out of my gut that there had to be more. There had to be something else. And I had been extremely healthy my entire life. And I know that the body can heal itself. And so I think for me, it was really pushing back on the medical institution of what else? Why can't the body heal itself? Why aren't you talking more about nutrition? Why aren't you speaking more about, you know, healthy? And as we went through this, we were getting very, very sick in the hospital. Madison was getting even sicker, and I got very, very sick in the hospital as well. I actually almost died through the process.
Oh, no. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it was really pushing to find something else. And, you know, Western medicine, the physicians just didn't agree with me looking other places, such as alternative or holistic or something functional, or, you know, the body healing itself or nutrition. It just wasn't in the conversation. And for me, that was very challenging. It was very frustrating because that's how I grew up. That's how I've stayed healthy. It's really just kind of been the core. And so through this process, being given one answer, one alternative, kind of one doom and gloom, this is all you have to look forward to. And, you know, 6 rounds of chemotherapy because we say, you know, this because we say, you know, dozens and dozens of drugs and lots of anesthesia. I mean, Madison had 70 some procedures within the first year that had anesthesia. And I was digging for why, you know, clinical data, some sort of support on this. And then also, you know, the negative outcomes of all of these drugs, medications, and anesthesia. And I just wasn't being given the answers that I wanted. And it was very frustrating for me. And I know it was very frustrating for the doctors. So, but for me, it was all or nothing. I mean, we were driving in the wrong direction, looking for kind of these answers in Western medicine. When I found alternative and kind of this holistic and functional, I think, approach, that's when things really opened up for us and things got better. Our daughter started getting better, and then I was getting better after almost dying of a really fatal staph infection that I got.
How did you educate yourself? How do people educate themselves about this? Or how do they do that?
I reached out to everybody that I knew. I think I didn't stay quiet. And that's kind of a two-part in the situation. I wanted to speak with anybody that I could. I've been in the medical profession, so I had a lot of friends, a lot of different physicians that I'm very good friends with, have great relationships with. And it was reaching out and asking, if you were in this situation, or now that you know I'm in this situation, what would you do? What are your suggestions? And so I was just taking every piece of advice that I could possibly get. And in that situation, I found many individuals that were kind of leading us towards, you know, what about better nutrition? What about functional medicine? What about essential oils? What about, you know, just more of the chiropractic? And then also really digging in deep in functional medicine and figuring out the source of, you know, or the trigger, I guess you could say, of these diseases, cancers, you know, what spurred this? What triggered this? And really, that's where I really had an eye-opening situation. I think my husband did as well. As you know, the body can heal itself. We just have to really find what that looks like. We also found physicians and nurses that do a lot of, you know, ozone treatments and infusions and cryotherapy. And it really just opened up another opportunity. But also, Western medicine does not believe in that. And so we walked a very thin line. And we also live in a medical neglect state. So there was a lot of research.
You're in the ubiquitous state, not the specific. I apologize. I heard that.
Yeah. So with each state that you live in, I think that each individual needs to research, you know, what that means. And I think that, you know, being able to know the laws is very important too. And we weren't aware of those laws until, you know, we started researching it. So I knew that I needed a balance between Western medicine and anything that we were going to be looking at for functional medicine or alternative medicine, because we needed to figure out, you know, some way that, you know, we could be, you know, appropriate with Western medicine, because there is a protocol that you have to follow in each state.
You know, I think people, you know, as we start a new year, you know, people are worried about some of the mundane, about how they get to work, or, you know, should their kids be able to do this or do that, sort of the day-to-day kinds of things that we all go through as people and as parents. But when you're going through this kind of crisis with Madison, you're deathly ill, but you still have a 6-year-old son. You're still a wife. You're still a businesswoman. You still, you know, have other responsibilities there. How do you adapt your parenting style to meet the challenges that are there? And how do you also create a sense of normalcy for that 6-year-old boy?
It was really difficult. And it's one of those things that I think it's either ingrained in you or it's not. And through the book, I really take everyone on a journey that it goes back to that preparation. You really need to be prepared for anything that can happen to you in your life. And this was not something that I ever wanted to be an expert on. I didn't want to be an expert on cancer, genetic genes. You know, we then found out, you know, not only did our daughter have malignant liver cancer, but she had a really rare genetic cancer gene that did not come from my husband nor myself. And we would have never caught it if we would have even done genetic testing. So for us, it was like this perfect storm of something that was created inside of her, but we couldn't have been prepared for it regarding, you know, any sort of test that would have told us that. Not that that would prepare you even more, but I really want people to be very, very aware that, you know, you need to kind of map out your life. You need to map out your finances. You need to map out, you know, what if every time you turn around, and it doesn't need to be anything negative. For me, I had to turn it into something really powerful. I mean, there is power in pain. There is purpose in the pain that you go through. You just have to dig deep and find it. And through this journey, you'll also kind of read the purpose and gift goes back a really long time, that I searched for a purpose and my gift since I can remember, you know, being in church or being in groups and being asked, you know, what is your purpose? What is your gift? Through all of this, I think I found a bigger purpose and a bigger gift than I ever knew. And I think now it's just really trying to educate people on, you know, digging deep and finding that gift and purpose. Mine was really advocating for my daughter and myself and finding other options. But also, like you asked, how do you hold it all together? And each and every day, it was honestly just digging as deep as I could into my body and being able to find that purpose in the pain that we were going through. And there had to be some reason that we were going through it. You know, we were told a lot of different things. We were told we had bad luck. We were told, you know, you're just one of those that end up in these situations. And I didn't take that for an answer, but I also had to turn it into something really, really positive. So for me, it was a juggling act. And I think for anybody, it is, because there has to be that ability to hold it together, because everything that I did in that hospital, my daughter fed off of my emotions, my reactions, actions, everything that I did, she fed off of. So I figured that out very, very quickly, that I needed to have a positive attitude. I needed to be really purposeful in each of my steps and things that I did and how I treated the situation, but also how I managed, you know, my husband and my son were living their life at home. We lived in the hospital. We didn't get to go home, but every 4 weeks we would get to go home for 24 to 48 hours and we would land back in the hospital for another 4 weeks. And I had to figure out really quickly how to get us out of there, but also how to keep this positive mentality, move forward, figure out, you know, kind of the cracks in the system to be able to get us out of there and then hold myself together. I mean, I had a full-time job and I was begging my accounts, my customers, not to give up on me, to please just, you know, be there for me. And I'd be back in the saddle as soon as I could, you know, not knowing that I probably wouldn't be there again for a very long time.
Did they do that? Did they support you?
They did. They did. It was absolutely amazing. We had a support system that was like nothing that I could have ever imagined, but I didn't stay quiet. You know, I talked about this a lot and, you know, we had a lot of bullying. I had bullying from my family members, you know, just stay quiet. You know, you're just causing too much ruckus. You know, if you keep talking about this, people won't like you. This is just not a subject people want to talk about. And I think instead of discouraging me, it put a fire in my belly that I can't even explain. And so through this book, I really talk about, you know, don't let anybody push you down. Don't let anybody bully you. I mean, the doctors, I don't know if it was purposeful or if it wasn't, but, you know, the bullying was at every turn. You know, do what I say, you know, or she'll die. Do what we say. This is the protocol. This is what we've studied for many years. This is what you have to do. And so for me, I wasn't taking those answers at all. But it's that positivity and finding that faith that I had to have every day.
You know, I always say it's all BS, belief systems. And you've alluded a couple of times to faith and hope. What role does that play in your life? And did you ever come close to losing?
I did. You know, I came close a lot. There were situations, like I've stated in this book, when I didn't think the floor could fall out anymore. And it just kept falling out at every turn. And I'm about tearing up because, you know, every time I talk about it, it was just really, really tough. And I think for people out there that are going through this or know somebody that has gone through this or is currently going through this, you just need to wrap your arms around those individuals, you know, and really have support for them. You can lose your faith all the time. I think for me, it was the people that I met in the hospital. I met a lot of families. I paid very close attention. You'll notice in the book, that's one of the threads of just wondering how everybody else was managing, because there were days where I didn't feel like I could get up off the floor. And I think if I would have known then what we were going to go through, I would have been probably in a puddle in the corner in that hospital room, in the fetal position, unable to probably move. We just had the worst situations that could happen. And I think just letting everybody know that, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is purpose in the pain and there's purpose in what they're going through. You just may not be able to see it yet, but if you dig deep and really try to find it, it is there. You know, I've read a lot and I've talked to a lot of people that say, you know, everything happens for a reason and that's BS. Maybe, maybe not. But I think for us, I had to know that there was a bigger purpose and there was a higher meaning to what we were going through. And it brought some additional power and just grit inside of me that I think helped me move through this situation and find additional ways to maneuver through the healthcare system and situations like this that are very gray and very, very dark. And you don't know if there is another opportunity or another option. So yeah, I lost my faith a lot, but at every turn, I would see somebody in that hospital. I would meet families that maybe had a worse situation than I did. And I vowed every single day to find something to be grateful for and find something to be blessed about. And that's what I did. And I journaled a lot. I journaled probably 75 plus pages, you know, while we were in the hospital, and really just, like I said, keeping that faith and finding something to be grateful for was huge for us.
I would assume that when you take a look at your friends, family, the community, people in your world, there were a lot of people that surprised you by how much they stepped up and maybe others that disappointed you. And the question I was, I'd love you to comment not only on that, but also talk about what can people do to a subject that people really don't want to talk about very much. What can they do to support other families like yours? What's the best way they can do it?
Yeah, you know, there's so many different ways that you can support. And we had a lot of people that I didn't even realize would come out of the woodwork. And, you know, just calling, you know, reaching out, text messaging, coming to see us was fantastic. I think, you know, for us being in this situation, just having people listen, you know, every single situation is very, very different. You know, some people are, you know, locked in that hospital for a really, really long time. They don't get to go home, if ever. Some do get to go home. And I think for us, it was just people hearing, you know, what we were going through and maybe just listening. We had others that did bring gifts. We had people that brought food. A lot of people supported, you know, my husband and my son with, you know, coming over and raking our lawn and helping us with anything that we needed, bringing food over, just anything, saying a lot of prayers. That was the biggest thing. I just need prayers. And my daughter and I would sit in the windowsill of the hospital, you know, every single night, and we would watch the ice skaters in the park across, ice skating, and just beautiful every single day. And we would just feel these prayers coming through. It's just being able to say some prayers for people that are there that maybe you know or that you don't know is absolutely huge. So I can honestly tell people that prayer in large amounts can move mountains, and we felt it. And I really appreciated everyone's prayers. But we had people going, you know, even a step further. And I mean, my intuition on the first couple of days was, okay, what is this going to look like? What are medications going to cost? You know, what is this going to look like? I mean, even though I had superb medical health insurance, I knew that that wasn't going to cut it. And so I went to the pharmacy downstairs in the hospital immediately and ran some dummy scripts to see what this was going to cost us and just being prepared. And to my surprise, you know, these medications were about $15,000 a month if we did not have insurance. And they were life and death, supposedly. Life and death medications that if she didn't get these, she would die. But yet, you know, the picture started opening up for us in so many different ways of how do you afford this? How does anybody afford this? You know, the healthcare system is broken. I mean, it's honestly broken. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I'm not negative towards it. We just have to figure out ways to work around it. So we opened up a GoFundMe account. And within a couple of weeks, we had $35,000 that people had given and people that we didn't even know. It was absolutely extraordinary to feel the love that was coming to us. So I tell people, you know, anything that you feel that you can do, please do it. But don't close your mind. Don't feel that, you know, you don't want to be there for someone. Or, you know, if someone in my situation, I would ask everybody, you know, how are you doing? And I wanted to hear other people's stories. I wanted to get my mind off of it. And so many times we would have, you know, friends or family be like, you know, my situation's not nearly as bad as yours. You know, don't worry about me. It's no big deal. And as I've talked to more and more people, I think that that's kind of one of those fallbacks. People don't want to burden you with what they're going through because they know you're going through something much worse. Just talk to us like we're normal. Talk to people, you know, tell them what you're going through, allow people into your world, because it was a very lonely, lonely process. I don't think I've been so lonely in my entire life as living through that for so long. And I just wanted people just to be human, just to be normal and just open up and have conversations with us.
Have you noticed that life is getting more and more expensive? From grocery prices to real estate values, everywhere you turn, prices seem to be skyrocketing. Well, Mark has dedicated decades of his career and life to serving entrepreneurs and professionals to build real wealth, and in most cases, multi-generational wealth. The reality is, we all have to navigate turbulent times in this economy. But the difference will be for those that have a roadmap and a customized plan for building wealth. That's why, as a listener to this podcast, we are so excited to share with you first access to Mark's newest book, The Ultimate Investment, A Roadmap to Grow Your Business and Build Multi-Generational Wealth. When you access this book, you'll discover how to know when you're working a job instead of a business. That hard work isn't all about hours put in. This will make you more productive. Why you need to live with your back against a wall. How to surround yourself with the right people who support your vision. And so much more. Go to www.markbmurphy.com/book to get access now. Once again, go to www.markbmurphy.com/book. And now, back to the show.
Was writing the book, Amy, somewhat therapeutic to you? Does it change kind of the perspective of how you look back on? It's about a decade of your life, the past decade. What did the book do? What did the book change you?
Yeah, it's a really great question. It was. And I think God knew that this was going to be extremely therapeutic for me. About a year ago, God brought me to my knees. I had to completely surrender because I had taken a lot of animosity and a lot of sadness, fear, pain, anxiety, and just bottled it up inside. You know, I was so busy with taking care of my daughter and figuring out how to move forward, figuring out, you know, how to figure out our finances and keep a job that I really didn't take care of myself. And so for writing the book, it was one of the most therapeutic things that I've ever done in my entire life. But it was also an opportunity to see the entire story and my entire last 9 years through different lenses, put a different perspective on it. Everything that I thought at those moments, it didn't look like that any longer now looking back 9 years. And so I think I tell anybody, even if you're not going to write a book, journal it, talk about it, do anything that you possibly can to kind of look back through this story and see how you see it through different lenses. And I also started a podcast, and it started slowly, but I have interviewed a lot of families that have been going through or have gone through something similar to us, either, you know, having a child diagnosed with cancer or a disease, or having, you know, something just traumatic happen to their child. And I've really honed in on what their perspective was when they were going through it. And then how does that look now? And, you know, what could they have done differently? But it's all for me now about being able to look back through this and see things that I didn't see or see things clearer. And so I think it was one of the most therapeutic things that I've ever done, but it was difficult and it was bittersweet. And I did speak with a couple of families that they've actually written books through this. And it was kind of similar to my story. It was the hardest thing that they've ever done, but it was the most therapeutic. And it healed them in ways that they didn't see at the time. And so I really encourage people to just talk about it, write about it, put it down on paper, relive it. And I promise you, it will be very, very healing and therapeutic.
Well, tell people, what are your future plans for advocacy or other initiatives or things you're doing, you know, going forward?
Yeah, you know, so I launched a website just to really kind of get it out there. And
give us the website address. Please share that.
Yeah, so it's amypost.com. It's just my first and last name. It's AmyPost.com. And you can read the first chapter. You can learn about kind of what we're doing for advocacy and hope. You can learn about my history and just a little bit more about the book. I think that, you know, that I needed to figure it out as well. The podcasts are wonderful. They're very therapeutic for me, but also, you know, just really kind of hearing, you know, these other hero stories has been fantastic. So I've launched that on some different platforms. So you can find, you know, my podcasts as well. And then I opened up a Facebook page. It's called Advocacy and Hope, and you can look it up. It's Advocacy and Hope. It's right there. It's one of the only ones, but it really draws people into an organization that I developed. I wanted those in the beginning that had children with, you know, challenging health issues. I wanted them to come together on a platform and in an organization to just really talk about their experience. You know, don't keep it silent, you know, talk about it. And then also, you know, tell us what you need. You know, everybody needs something different. And I think at each point in your life going through this, you needed something different, whether it be financial assistance, you know, just assistance with finding your faith, or, you know, some personal aspects. You know, maybe your marriage isn't doing well. Really just digging deep and seeing what your needs are. And so this Advocacy and Hope has really spurred out of my love for these families that I met and really wanting to help them in any position where they currently are, because it's real. There's not a lot of support out there that helps you through, you know, each and every aspect that you're going through. So then, you know, I wanted to take it a little step further. I really wanted the advocacy and hope to be opened up to those that really just have a passion for this. Their heart is really open, you know, to people that are going through these types of challenges. So just putting our brains together and kind of making a masterminds group of how can we help these individuals that are going through this? And so we opened up advocacy and hope to really everyone out there that has a passion for it, or if you're going through those types of struggles, or if you went through them years ago, you know, join this group and really join, you know, a group that can put a lot of different, I think, aspects together and put your specifics that you know. You know, do you have alliances with different groups that can really help these families with, you know, some counseling, some retreats or financial situations, some sort of, you know, different way to help these families. So that's what the organization has really now started gaining a lot of momentum. And I couldn't be more happy with how it's turned out, but I really need more support in those ways of people to just come together, join the group, and see how we can help these families.
You mentioned a couple of times that the healthcare system is broken. I don't think on this podcast we're going to fix the healthcare system. But could you, just in terms of from your experience, can you give us 1, 2, 3 things that you think would be the most important?
Yeah, you know, the healthcare system is what it is, but I think that the more we look at it, this brokenness has so many different parts. And for me, it was, you know, the doctors, I get it. There is a really fine line that physicians walk when it comes to seeing their patients in situations that are really, really dark. But I think for me, I really wanted to push these physicians in feeling more and acting more human. We were part of, you know, what I said in the book, you know, research projects. You know, we were treated like animals and science projects. We weren't treated like humans. It was a very degrading situation that these families go through. And I think that it can take you to a really dark place where you're not treated human any longer. And I think that the healthcare system takes that humanistic piece out of it, and it's just treated like a robot or a science project. And it's really, really difficult for families to go through. And I think for me, it's realizing that, you know, these doctors can have a bit of some heart in this, and they can treat us like humans without, you know, losing the aspect of themselves. And I get it. You know, once they put their heart or their emotions into it, I understand sometimes you can't think straight. But I think for me, I talk in the book about really just wanting these physicians to understand if they were a patient, you know, how would they want to be treated? And I would ask them at every turn, you know, have you gone through anything like this? Has a family member gone through anything like this? And the answer seemed to be no, which made me feel even more kind of sad for the system, because they didn't have really the ability to kind of see how we felt. So with that, I want these families to know that it's okay to push back. It's okay to challenge. It's okay to ask questions. We challenged at every single turn, everything I challenged about. And I changed protocols, and I called meetings with the heads of every single department and really pushed back on their charting systems and why so many drugs and, you know, why not more, you know, look into that healthy eating and diet and positivity and just different ways to kind of think differently. So it's not going to change, but I think that together we can push back and at least have more things changed. I mean, in the book, you'll see some pretty cool things that the system was able to do for us that I don't think they did for any other family, but it was just because I pushed really, really hard. And I put the why out there. Why not? Why aren't you doing this? Wouldn't you want it done for your family member or for you? And really just trying to bring a more humanistic feeling into this without breaking their system. But also there are other options. There's other alternatives out there. And it's really being prepared for this situation of what are you going to do? So we dove really, really hard into the functional medicine and finding the triggers to these cancers and diseases and what's causing everything. Now, I understand, I mean, at every turn in life, I mean, we're getting toxicity from all of our foods, our air, everything in life, you know, that we are purchasing, eating, consuming, doing, you know, it gives us pollution and toxins and things that are just breaking the body down. So I think now more than ever, it's really, really hard for us to stay healthy. But I think that that's one of the reasons I also started Advocacy and Hope is really trying to have people think about the health of their body and the ability of the body to heal and just thinking in other aspects of how that functional medicine and alternative options can help them and just maybe kind of seeing if they can merge those worlds together. I don't think that many of the physicians are going to be able to merge those worlds. So it's going to take us as the individuals to really kind of step up and push back and really kind of take charge of how you want this to go if something like this does happen to you.
You know, you've told us a little bit about, or a lot about, 3-year-old Madison. Why don't you tell us a little bit about 13-year-old Madison, tell us a little bit about the Post family, and tell us about what's next.
Yeah. You know, we've had a journey over 9 years, and, you know, for us, it doesn't end. So for one, you know, we are very honest with our daughter. She knows everything that she's been through. With her rare genetic cancer gene, she has 2 more cancers that will hit her. So we are still on that journey every single day to find the triggers, live a healthy life, really try to figure out, I mean, if we can dodge these bullets of what, you know, the clinical data and the healthcare system have told us that, you know, are coming our way. So for us, it's being really honest with her, and she has grown up to be an extremely strong girl. You know, she's 13. I think she has overcome some things that, you know, physicians never thought that she would. And with all of the chemotherapy and the steroids and antibiotics and everything that she went through, you know, it really breaks down the bones, it breaks down the body, but she found a love in acro gymnastics. She's an acrobat. She's one of the flyers. Wow. And she is spectacular. Now, she's much smaller than anybody else her age, because, you know, she just had a lot of growth issues. It's another thing that we're working with the functional medicine and alternative is to figure out how to get her growth, you know, spurred without any type of additional drugs, you know, in that fashion. So she is much smaller, but she makes for that perfect flyer and for that perfect, you know, individual to be just a cool, amazing gymnast. And that's what she is. But it's very cool, Mark, because when we started trying to find things that she wanted to be in, gymnastics was kind of one of those things, but she poo-pooed everything that we wanted her to be involved in. Every gymnastics group, she's like, nope, they're sissies. They don't know what it is. You know, I need something that challenges me. And we're like, oh my goodness, you know, we've got to figure out, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder. I had to figure out how to make sure that she didn't have a chip on her shoulder. Because it's also hard to get back into society, Mark. I don't think I really touched on that. How do you go from living in the hospital for so many years to entering society again? I mean, we felt like we were in a prison. And I talk about that in the book of, you know, then re-entering society and trying to figure out how to get her back into school. She was 2 years behind. She missed over two and a half years of school.
Right.
You know, we went through a lot of roller coasters. So with her, it was just being able to find something that she loved, and gymnastics was it. But I can honestly tell you, I just thought I was going to beat my head against a tree trying to figure out what she was looking for. And for her, she needed to have that control. She needed to have something that pushed her so hard. And that was the coolest thing to find about this girl, that she just was looking for one of the toughest things that she could possibly dive into to put every ounce of her energy in. And that's what she did. I mean, these athletes train like nobody else, and they're just phenomenal athletes. And that's what she is. So we couldn't be more proud of her. So she's doing well, but it also has taken a lot of consistent functional medicine, alternative, just different things with her body, a different diet, you know, cutting out the medications, cutting out all the drugs, doing things that maybe other people, you know, don't do for their children. I think one of the biggest things too is pushing those doctors to ask for exit strategies. And that's what I did from day one. And they did not agree with me. There was not going to be an exit strategy on these medications and all these drugs. We don't get too deep into it because the healthcare system is, it is what it is. It's a drug system. And I think more people just need to realize that their body can function with no drugs. There are a few that are absolutely needed and necessary, and I understand that. But that was one of the things that, you know, we had to work on that exit strategy. So we got her off of absolutely almost everything. I think we got her off of almost 16 drugs that she was on.
Oh my God. I can only imagine. I will tell you that the name of this podcast is the Hero of the Hour podcast. So I will tell you, Madison, takes a chip off the old block. She's a badass, just like her mother. And you're clearly the hero of the hour today for me. And I just want to thank you for taking time, you know, out of your busy day to spend some time with us. I know that the name of the book, and I'm asking everybody to go out and order it. It's called Out of the Gray and Into the Light by Amy Post. She's giving you her website and her podcast. Anything else you want to share with people about that before we go?
You know, I start off every podcast saying, you know, I appreciate your time. I mean, everybody has the ability to do what they want with their time. And I think just be really, really intentional on how you spend your time in this new year and really think about things that maybe you didn't think about before. And when you're driving by those hospitals that have doubled, tripled, and quadrupled in size over the last several years, think about those people that are in there and how lonely they are, and just give from the heart this year. I think more than anything, just give back. If you can find it in your heart, give back and be really intentional and know that there are people out there that really need you, and maybe just do something different that you haven't done before. And that's where this advocacy and hope comes from, because you can give someone hope with very little effort. And that's what we needed. And I really just want to pour that into everybody. But also, you can't buy time. And I appreciate everybody's time who takes the time to listen to the podcast or go on our website, order our book, and just pass this generosity on to somebody else.
That's great advice and words. Thank you so much, Amy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Hero of the Hour podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you are listening to this on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share the podcast episode with them. You can catch the show notes for this episode and more at www.markbmurphy.com/podcast. Be sure to check out the other great books and resources on the website while you're there. Once again, it's www.markbmurphy.com/podcast. All links can be found in the description below. We look forward to serving you on the next episode. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Guest speakers and their firms are not affiliated with or endorsed by PAS or Guardian, and opinions stated are their own. Registered representative and financial advisor of Park Avenue Securities, LLC, PAS. OSJ, 200 Broad Hollow Road, Suite 405, Melville, New York, 11747, 631-589-5400. Securities products and advisory services offered through PAS, member FINRA, SIPC. Financial representative of the Guardian Life Insurance Company of America, Guardian, New York, New York. PAS is a wholly owned subsidiary of Guardian. Northeast Private Client Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of PAS or Guardian. California Insurance License Number 0B36048. Arkansas Insurance License Number 741545. Expiration and submission numbers located in the show notes.